Good evening. Tonight on SAE, we explore the seedy underbelly of, well, underbellies. Neighbors John and Jess describe Trent Gay as a quiet recluse that mostly kept to himself. But behind closed doors, he was a man ravaged by compulsion, lethargy, and the long-term effects of mild dietary child abuse. Journalist Kat Smith gets up close and personal with serial killer Trent Gay and finds out revenge isn't the only dish best served cold.
So tell me, what started this serial killing spree?
I had Captain Crunch, the first Captain Crunch, ate with my bare hands from the bag, and that was really when I tasted the blood from the roof of my mouth, and I got used to that mixture of my own blood, of the Captain Crunch, of the milk.
Where did you usually find these mascots?
I met Trix, the rabbit, at a continental breakfast. We went back to my room. We had some milk. I had, at that time, I had a large wooden spoon that I would carry. And when I woke up, there was a sort of rainbow-colored milk all over my clothes and all over the bed. And that was the first time I felt that I might get caught. It felt like things might be getting out of control. I had a Sam's Club membership. I told people that I owned a restaurant because I would buy pallets of Fruit Loops at a time. Dozens and dozens of boxes, sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a week. Growing up, I had never seen a vegetable. The first time I saw broccoli, I thought it was a plant. I put water on it. I have type 2 diabetes. As we speak, I've got a 165-gallon kiddie pool filled with sugar smacks and heavy cream, no spoon, and I'm ready to kill again.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Mr. Sophistication. I'm in my walk-in freezer. We're actually talking on the remote again. We're still distancing. Don't anybody worry. I got some flack from some people who thought it sounded like we were all at the same table last episode. So let me assure everyone we are not in the same room. Tonight, serial killers. Not the real kind, but the make-believe movie kind. Before we get going, Kevin, I understand we are giving away some exclusive merchandise.
We are. We have a limited run of Speak All Evil t-shirts, which feature the fantastic logo for the show. And all you need to do to get one of these t-shirts is to go ahead on iTunes, subscribe, leave us a rating and leave us a review, and then you can hit up Trent at speakallevil.com, let him know your shirt size, and if you trust him enough with your address, throw that in there too. It helps me to ship it. But that's it. That's all you have to do to rock one of the brand new super dope Speak All Evil t-shirts. And for right now, for the first 50, we'll throw in a free sticker as well.
Oh,
wow. Woo.
Yeah, and I want to be very clear. This is a quid pro quo. This is 100% a quid pro quo. We want rave reviews. We want good reviews. Don't go on there leaving middling milquetoast stuff. We got a review in last night. I think you guys should hear. I haven't shown this to the group yet. Review came in over the Twitter. You guys really aren't on there. Kat and I are on there. It says the following. Speak All Evil Pod. Episode 4 was awful. But excited to hear more. I'd watch movie recommendations from you, especially Dave and Kat. You could sell packages of recommendations based on theme. $10 a piece, I'd buy one. Multiple lists based on category. Cluck Trent, that's me on Twitter, also has a great radio voice. So kind of a mixed bag, mixed review. That's by Jonathan Z Music. Z for Zachariah, I'm guessing. But that's not the kind of review that's going to get you a t-shirt or sticker. I will, however, sell you a pack of movie recommendations from the gang. Email me, Trent, at speakallevil.com. We'll send you out packs of themed recommendations, $10 a piece. I'll hook you up with our Venmo, our PayPal, however you want to do it. And now let's get down to business. Dave, Serial Killers, what did you bring? Where did you watch it?
The film I chose for Serial Killers was Angst, 1983. It's an Austrian film directed by Gerald Kargl. And Gerald Kargl became financially in distress and over the controversy surrounding this film. And this was his last film that he made, sadly, starring Erwin Leder, I think that's how he's, or Leder, who was in Underworld, Das Boot, Schindler's List. Pretty much, if you need a creepy guy with his eyes bugging out, you call up old Erwin. This story is based on the triple murder case of Werner Niesek in 1980, who's quoted as saying, "I just love it when women shiver in deadly fear because of me. It's like an addiction that will never stop." the way...
God. So true.
Wow.
The way the killer is portrayed in Angst is as a socially awkward 1970s Mick Jagger.
Yes.
killing people out of lust. And while he's killing these people, he's narrating the story of his abusive childhood. This movie is like intensely personal to the point where the viewer is deprived of any other character development besides for the killer, who is the main character. So inevitably when the serial killer in this movie gets caught, spoiler alert, but it's, you know, history, you feel like a little sting of compassion. And it's again that moment where your fear is warped between fear of murder and then also this same kind of weird fear of getting caught. So I liked that the way they played out the character development of the lead character, and you hear all his thoughts mostly throughout the whole thing, like what's going through his mind as he's killing. And he's really this like limp-wristed, like he barely kills people. He's just flailing around the whole time. And that too gets really frustrating and exhausting to watch. But I thought it made it very, very agonizingly realistic.
Yeah, it's anxiety or angst inspiring to watch it. You feel his like psychotic nervous energy the whole time. And he, you talked about the haplessness of his attack, like his initial attack. He just goes so wrong. It's so awkward and hard to watch. And then he's very unhappy at, you know, it happened too fast. It wasn't as dramatic as he wanted. He has to try to slow everything down. I love this one. And this is on Prime right now. It's on Shudder. I discovered this one last year. This is cited by Gaspar Noé as a prime influence on his filmmaking, French auteur, provocateur, that we're big fans of on the show. So that's why I watched it. And I really liked the portrayal. Seemed like, you know, the whole like fear thing, I think, is something that sometimes you don't get in the fictional serial killer portrayals. That this is like a person that's ruled by this constant fear, and they're trying to instill that fear in other people to find some sort of to find their satisfaction, be it sexual or whatever. But I think a lot of times I haven't seen it nailed quite as well, that fear element, as it is in this.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that this movie, what makes it so scary to me, is that there are people that batshit crazy out there. Like 100%. And most of them probably never go quite as far as our star here, if you want to call him a star, in Angst goes. But there are people that are that fucking crazy out there. I found this on Shudder. I'd never seen this. This is the first time I'd ever watched Angst. I'd heard Dave talk about it a little bit, probably just as we were kind of dealing with picks for the show. But the Shudder synopsis, like, just kind of nails it. It calls out Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. It calls out Gaspar Noé, and it also compares it to Man Bites Dog. Movie very much reminded me of Man Bites Dog, to the point where I think that those film students that were making Man Bites Dog watched this movie, and basically what they did is they just did like a more swagged up version of the killer and took it over the top. Instead of internal dialogue, they externalized everything with like film crew. His bragging and his flippant ways.
It also reminded me of Clockwork Orange, but like instead of like the obsession with milk, it was sausage in this one. Just like really that gross sausage eating scene. I respect a scene like that.
Both of them.
The place he goes to, the bar or whatever restaurant that is that he goes to just, you know, like, oogle girls and eat sausage.
Really uncomfortable end scene.
We need more places like that.
He came there to oogle girls and eat sausages, but he had both, so he did both of those things.
Kat, you must have enjoyed this one.
I liked parts of this one. I thought the cinematography is very interesting, like the camera work. I'm a big fan of, like, you know, the camera like on the person and then like them kind of like moving around. I thought the music was interesting. It was like had this weird eerie thing going on. But the voiceover wasn't terrible. I liked it more than like other voiceovers that we've heard. I just thought it was a little one note after a while. Like, you know, a few minutes into him, you know, trying to murder this family, I was like, okay, so what else? Like, it kind of just drags on. I felt like it was just kind of a little boring. And the movie's only like an hour and 15 minutes long, so it's not a very long movie, but it felt like it was going on for an eternity for me. What I thought was interesting is that this movie came out only 3 years after the actual murders happened, which usually I feel like, you know, there's at least like a decade
but this quick turnaround.
It was, yeah, they were like Austrians, mass murderer. That's what they called him, but he only killed 4 people in total.
If you look up that guy's wiki, you know, everything about Angst says that it's loosely based on Werner Niesack, or however you say it. But if you look up what he actually did, that's a bunch of bullshit. They basically just threw this thing into production and they were like, all right, we're going to make a movie and we'll just fictionalize some stuff and say it's loosely based. So I don't know if they were trying to avoid potential legalities or the fact that...
Maybe, because he's still alive.
It's too bad.
Like today. But a lot of the fucked up things that happen in the movie, he actually did. Like what I think of is the heart medication. You know, he's making sure that the old woman takes the heart medication so he can, you know, keep her alive for longer to torture her for longer.
That really happened.
And she got tortured a lot. The family, there was a lot more torture in real life. Like the girl, the daughter got, they said between like 7 and 11 hours she was tortured before she got strangled to death. She had like a bunch of welts and burns on her. On her body. So, but other than that, you know,
So in real life, he was a lot better at it than in the movie. He must have been more.
It seems so.
He must have been more satisfied.
Better at it.
I liked how totally oblivious he was to his situation once he has moved on from the first conquest. He sort of has another plan, and he like the discrepancy between how well he thinks everything's going and what's actually happening is so out. This is just so beyond. I think again, I thought that was like kind of a sort of prescient or cogent look into like the mind of somebody who's having this psychotic break, basically. He's totally out of touch with reality.
Yeah, and there's like I actually liked the, I know we keep talking about narration and internal dialogue and stuff, but I actually really liked that like background, like mini documentary that they sort of get covering all the typical like budding psychopath markers and the abuse. And I noticed, throwback, it looked to me like they're using actual pictures of the actor, like as a child, either that or they found somebody that looked close. And like, I know you had a description of him, a Gutter, but I don't know if you guys watched Game of Thrones, but this dude basically looked like Theon Greyjoy as an absolute psychopath.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he so did. Oh, my God.
I think a lot of the family tropes are heartbreaking. You guys talk about the, you know, the medicine, and he's obsessed with keeping this, you know, this one woman alive. I thought it was heartbreaking when the daughter has this ability to convince him, you know, that she needs her medicine. I thought that was like really well done. Mm-hmm. Smart filmmaking for 1983. You know, even if the killer catches on kind of quickly, it buys her time. And then for me, I wouldn't say come off the rails, but I was not prepared for a sequence in this film where we go straight vampire and then tack on some necrophilia and then we just start jerking off. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of came out of left field.
Sort of a triple crown. Prepared.
So thank you, Dave.
He's drinking blood. He's necrophilian up. Yeah. He has a spontaneous orgasm when he's thinking about having the corpses with him all the time. Or when he's like, it occurred to me that I could just have the bodies with me. And I think it shows him actually just sitting there without touching himself, have an orgasm over this thought.
Mm.
Kat, you read this stuff all day long. I mean, don't look at me like I'm telling you something you never
heard. So many orgasms this week. The serial killer, there was so many orgasms.
Oh my God.
All the characters, myself, anyone who was in the proximity of my television.
A lot of orgasms going on.
These serial killers are some twisted fucks. And it gives me a raging boner.
Well, speaking of which, my choice this week, I decided to go a little bit outside of the box. Get a little bit intercontinental with it. The 2013 Argentinian film called She-Wolf, aka Mujer Lobo. This is, you can watch this on Tubi with ads, but I discovered this on a streaming subscription service called Midnight Pulp that I really, really love. There's tons of cult and foreign classic, indie underground, just tons of wild stuff. It's like $4 a month. It's a total steal for the price of like one movie rental. You can have Midnight Pulp all the time, and you can find movies like She-Wolf from South America. This is about a sex worker who trolls the subways of Buenos Aires and picks up clients and dispatches of them in a number of gruesome ways. And she's got, it seems like, a little bit of a personality problem. There seem to be a few personalities operating at the same time, and they're all a little bit different. And she's also being pursued by local authorities, which the local authorities in this movie, a lot different than the authorities depicted in Angst or any of the other movies that we're going to watch this week. Real hands-on detective work. I loved this one. Big fan of this movie. Kevin, what did you think of this one? You haven't mentioned it all week, so I've been curious. I'm saying, geez, Kevin watched She-Wolf. He hasn't said one word about it.
The company outing. You didn't show up to the team building exercise this week.
Yeah, I know. I've missed actual corporate meetings, like professional meetings that I was getting paid for, and heard about it less than the little spontaneous marshmallow roast you guys had the other night. I'm very sorry, but...
Well, your pick for this week came up in conversation.
So my first note a little ways into this was Trent picked a porno and basically threw his pick in front of the moving subway train this week. I wasn't loving this movie until the cop apartment scene and the chase scene, and I thought it turned around for me a little bit there. It's super confusing. This is one of the few movies that I personally would recommend reading a little bit about, because it's one character one character played by three different actresses portraying a different part of her personality. And if you don't know that going in, the whole beginning of this movie can really be confusing. Once I kind of understood that, I started to enjoy it more. I mean, I question whether, you know, it's kind of lowbrow horror going for like super highbrow stylization. Like I look at a movie like this that's shot in black and white and very stylized, and I wonder at the end of it, you know, did it earn that? Or was that just something that they kind of threw in there to like maybe make it a little more viable? And I'm just saying, I know a lot of the horror movies that we've watched and even some of our picks aren't filled with like Oscar worthy performances. But I thought this was a pretty bold movie to go so artsy and stylized and sparse. Cause what it did for me is it made any acting performance shortcoming really stand out. That being said, there were a couple images. Mm-hmm. There's a post-sex image, where all three personalities kind of, you know, are draped over a love interest. I thought that was kind of moving, kind of showing, at least to me, that this is the first person that maybe all three of the personalities within this woman are comfortable with. And it kind of gives you some of that false hope that, like, you know, you could have, you know, a happy ending here. I guess for me, you know, rant over, it was uneven for me. I was really looking to come at you pretty hard, Trent, but at some point this movie does have some redeeming qualities in the third act that kind of pulled it together for me.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the same boat as Kevin, where I was definitely confused. It wasn't called She-Wolves, you know? It's like, why are there three people, you know, fucking shit up? But once I looked into it, like, while I was watching it and figured out that it was, you know, multiple personalities going on, which I think is very interesting. I think that's a very good way to do it. Because it shows the audience, you know, when the personalities are changing and who's doing, and, you know, what personalities are doing what. With the premise of this movie, I really wanted to like it. But it was just like, it seemed very sad to me that this girl felt that she had to, like, behave in all these different ways. Like, it was just sad, like, that she was obviously mentally ill in some way, and she's using these sexual encounters to, you know, fill whatever void of her personalities. I didn't think she was a sex worker. I didn't pick up on that. I thought she was just trolling the subway for dudes. But I would say parts of this film were a bit much for me. Especially since I have other people that live in my house.
Did we offend your roommates?
No, I just... there was one moment where I saw a little head poke around, and so I was like, what are you watching? So there were times where I definitely, like, muted it. Just, it was like, okay, are there any important plot points that are about to happen?
It's not in English, though. The screaming and grunting and orgasming.
It wasn't the words that were
the universal
really messing
language
up.
Of ejaculate.
Oh my god!
So
yeah, the detective was on another level. Serious load. For sure.
Real Law and Order guy. Law and Order guy.
Quite the opposite of what Kevin was saying. My actual complaint would be that there were too many happy endings. As I was watching it, I had to keep pausing it every 10-15 minutes to fillet myself and then continue on. Quality-wise, to me, it would be a great music video if you were in like a college film class. That would you would get an A on that. But, I mean, I didn't really like it. My girlfriend told me when I was watching it, she was like, you need to watch this movie in the bathroom by yourself. Don't watch this out here. And by the way, Kat, I need you to do some sort of promo for Spank All Evil. It's a 1-800 number.
Oh yes, I get to break out my radio voice.
Yeah,
I
get some porn music in there.
Hey you. Yeah, you. Are you tired of watching scary movies all by your lonesome? Squeezing that pillow all night long? Well, now there's a site just for you. SpankAllEvil.com. I'm so scared. Won't you come and hold me? Spank All Evil.
Well, I'm surprised we have to, Mormon All Evil or something, or Speak All Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
I just told you I filleted myself every 10 minutes. I mean, how
where there's do we a have lot to of go? Sex. She's a sex worker.
I'm sorry.
The last guy had sex with a corpse and shit on it.
Right. Was fine. Oh, yeah. Having sex with a corpse and shitting on it. But a sex worker taking agency and doing things on her own terms. And a female serial killer, though, that's over the line. There was a money shot. This is some kind of porn.
No. I think all we're saying, I mean, I didn't actually like the movie, but it wasn't because of the porn. That's the parts I liked.
I'm just kidding. I take exception to the idea that it's some sort of titillation factor. I mean, I just thought it was a good movie. I know you guys disagree, but it's not like I, you know, brought in something from Pornhub or something like that.
I think you know, one you know, just to point out some of the stuff I really did like. I liked the music a lot. I thought it was a cool score, kind of like Tom Waitsy. At times, that was done by Sami Buccella. Looks like he's done all of the director, and I can't remember if you said at the beginning, Trent, is it Tamay Garadagay? Garadagay?
Yeah, that's probably better than I would do.
Okay.
she's one of the foremost genre filmmakers in South America. Had a lot of success on the international film festival circuit. I'm kind of interested to see what else she's done because I'm not familiar.
Yeah, well, she's got three or four movies slated for 2020 release. The one that I looked at was like Las Furias. If you guys look that up, it sounds cool. But yeah, I like the music a lot. I think that this movie suffered because we had watched A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night so recently. They're just kind of stylistically similar and sort of going for the same things. And A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night is clearly far superior, in my opinion.
Sure. Sure.
I appreciate that you picked it, though. I mean, like, if a girl had recommended that I watch this movie, I would immediately, upon finishing it, I would be like, she wants to fuck me. And that's I was flattered kind of that you chose this for me to watch. So and you're like, you're really going to like this, Dave. And
well, I thought if anyone would appreciate it, it would be Dave. But we're getting, you know, Father Dave this week. But, you know, Dave went with angst. No. And Kevin went with Lars von Trier's, like, most provocative.
Well, no, hold on. First of all.
So these guys thought they were
hold
coming
on, get
in.
Back. Let me defend myself. Well, let me defend
myself. I just wanted...
No one was like slayed or murdered. They croaked. Everyone just croaked. Everyone just tipped over and croaked.
This is a serious podcast.
They were lame death scenes.
She bit his dick. Yeah. She bit a guy's dick off.
Yeah.
She bit a guy's dick off with her mouth.
There's so much penis biting on this show already. It's like, it's got to stop.
Well, no, that's a mark of a good horror movie. If somebody gets their dick bit off, like happens in She-Wolf, and she does the vampire murder toward the end of I don't want to, no spoilers, but I thought there was a good amount of blood and guts.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, you know, it's not for everyone. I'm a big fan. I gave it 4 out of 5 emojis myself.
Which emoji? The eggplant?
Yeah.
Oh, I love you. All right, my pick this week was 2018's Lars von Trier film, The House That Jack Built. I think if you're a fan of the genre, you probably know von Trier's work. Probably the closest that he would have done to our world would be Antichrist and Melancholia, both are which very interesting watches. I would recommend both. I had never seen this. I believe what Trent called my plight this week in picking my serial killer film was that I had a whiskey pick. I was struggling. And I very rarely...
Took me a second. Sorry. Yeah,
yes. I was clearly reaching out feelers to try to get some help here. I think what we're discovering is my pick is either immediately from the gut or I'm going to waste hours of my life overthinking it. But this one I had never seen. It is a long one. This movie's like 2.5 hours long. And it's basically Lars von Trier just taking you through the life of a serial killer. He's in the beginning, he's being led by somebody named Verge towards what is clearly kind of a retrospective of his life, heading towards something. And he picks kind of 5 specific moments in what is alluded to be a very long career as a very good serial killer. I dug this. I have a lot to say about it, but before, I'd love to go around the table and see what you guys thought of this one. And Kat's up next.
I liked this movie when it started. I had never seen it before, obviously, or else you guys probably would have heard about it before now. I liked when it was being set up to just show you this murderer, like the serial killer with OCD. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah,
I'm
love
like
that.
Watching it. I'm like, fucking yeah, he has to keep like going back into the house to like clean stuff because he's convinced that there's blood and all this stuff. And I was like, it's like a weird like kind of Dexter situation, but like to the extreme. And the whole time I was like, oh, this makes him like Bundy. Oh, this makes him like Dahmer and then Gein and then blah, blah, blah. It kind of lost me when it started with all like the Dante's Inferno kind of situation. But I will say my favorite part of this movie was the titty purse. That was definitely,
oh boy.
That was definitely my jam. I was like, can I make one of those? Can I crochet myself a titty purse?
That's right out of one of your true crime tales.
Yeah, yeah. It's a yeah. Ed Gein. Yeah. He had the nipple
Ed
belt.
Gein.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Nipple belt, titty purse. We've got a full fashion line that we can start up.
Perfect.
I like this movie better the second time. I'd watched it recently.
Me too.
For the first time. It's pretty new. I loved it. I liked that it was the stylistically, it was like very like freestyle, all different types of, even the screen would change, the frame within the movie and the cameras would change and just the whole outlook of the director was all over the place. And, structurally it reminded me strangely of 2001, A Space Odyssey. Because of how the journey, you know, into the like the unknown at the end, kind of reminded me a little bit of that. Obviously, it's not as grandiose and epic as 2001, A Space Odyssey, and it's not set in space. But
other than that, though,
it's
but
not.
Just something about the journey of the character, and I don't know, it was pretty brutal. And it was pretty, again, a very personal horror movie.
Yeah.
And I liked it. I found the scene where he was trying to get into the incident number two, as they're laid out in five different incidents. He's trying to talk his way into this house, and he's so bad at lying.
Oh, man, yeah.
And it's painful. And I'm a glutton for punishment when it comes to stuff that is just awkward and unrelenting in movies. And again, he just barely killed this woman. These scenes where these guys are just kind of like not really aggressive. It's almost scarier, this like floppy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just kind of like crushes her trachea and then she's gasping for air. It's pretty disturbing, that second incident. But I like the journey, the path of this movie is cool. It is a little too long.
This was definitely my favorite one by far this week. Kevin, you had me eating out of your hand for three or four episodes now. Once again, you have chosen my favorite one. And I've seen this three times now because the first time I went to see this at the theater, they did a one-night national screening of the uncut version last November. And I went to that, I was let down. I don't know. I was just, the expectations were such that there had been the big hubbub at Cannes Film Festival where like 100 people walked out, but then another 100 people gave it a standing ovation. There was all this controversy. Lars von Trier had been banned from Cannes Film Festival from when he was promoting Melancholia. So I watched it again when you recommended it for this episode, and I was like, I love this movie. I don't know what my problem was that night. And then I watched it again just because it's great. I mean, I think it's a masterpiece. You got, first of all, we haven't mentioned a star-studded cast. We've got Matt Dillon is the killer. Bruno Ganz is sort of his guide. Uma Thurman, Riley Keough, who I just saw recently in The Lodge. She was in Under the Silver Lake. She's made a lot of really interesting choices.
She's also Elvis's granddaughter, which I never knew.
And she is... But speaking of the, she is actually the titty purse. There's a lot of Riley.
Oh.
There's a lot of Riley in this movie. Your boob-log must have been overflowing, Kat.
Right off the page.
Off the page.
Loved it.
I loved, you know, I thought again a lot like Angst. I thought that it nailed. I loved the OCD stuff, and I thought that it nailed a lot of those subtle aspects of what seemed to sometimes drive these killers, that in the some of the more cheaper portrayals, they don't really get that deep. But you know, that fearful, again, he talks not too much about his childhood, but talks about being a fearful child, and you can see that he's fearful even when he's committing these crimes. I loved the Bob Dylan Subterranean Homesick Blues video card sequences. I loved him practicing expressions in the mirror so he can seem like a normal, like he has to like practice like normal expressions, you know, so he can pass out there while he's trying to do his stuff. The picnic, I think the picnic is legendary. This is in all of European auteur provocateur film. The picnic has got to go down in history. So big fan of this one.
That's one of the most disturbing scenes of the film. So one of the instances that he talks about, the five that he picks to tell Verge about as Verge is leading him to his fate. He basically, like, I got a very Bundy vibe from Matt Dillon's mm-hmm. character. You know, I know there's a lot of references to actual serial killers in this, but, like, you know, Matt Dillon, it starts in the Pacific Northwest. He has the crutch. He uses disguises.
Yeah,
he has all
yeah.
these attempts at girlfriends and family. But the family incident where he goes on this explanation of what order you kill a family of deer mm-hmm. is, like, one of the most chilling. Like, I mean, you know, yeah. this movie doesn't hide a whole lot. Like, you know what's yeah. coming. But just the way he explained that. And then when they're showing his relationship with Riley Q before she becomes the boob purse.
Titty purse.
Titty purse. She has, I mean, first of all, he calls her Simple.
Which is his nickname for her,
which is just brutal. And she looks at him at one point. And by the way, she acts this beautifully. Like, mm-hmm. she seems every bit as vulnerable and gullible. But she says to him, why do you have to be so cruel? I'm not completely stupid. And Matt Dillon delivers this line that just says, that fucking depends on your definition of completely. And I was like, oh, my God.
So
ouch.
There's a pretty extensive interview with Matt Dillon on YouTube. It's some sort of film institute, but if you look up House of Jack Built Matt Dillon interview, he talks about that scene and how hard it was to do with Riley Keough because she was so good at being terrified and he felt so awful about doing it. He said he really had a hard time getting through that one.
I had never thought of him as a villain. He rarely ever plays a villain, let alone a serial killer. But I liked him. Something about that like forehead that like sticks out over his eyebrows, and he's got like the really like chiseled square face. Mm-hmm. I thought he was scary.
Yeah,
this movie like gives you the feeling of isolation. You know, some of the horror comedies and the less serious stuff, you often see like killers with friends, but I think the reality of it is that these guys are often, you know, they're loners. They have no one around them. They establish these relationships and then they're soon gone because they kill them. So I thought the almost claustrophobic isolation of Matt Dillon's character was really well done in this, and it has a lonely tone to like the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean this one to me again touches on you know, tickles my theological bone, because essentially, you know, Verge, who is his guide, what they're referring to is Virgil, who is one of Rome's greatest poets, and notably in Dante's Divine Comedy, Virgil is Dante's guide through hell and purgatory. He died 19 years before Christ's birth. He was never baptized. Therefore, in lore, Virgil could never actually go to heaven. But since he did nothing to warrant hell, he's allowed to live in limbo and purgatory. So he knows the nine circles of hell better than anybody and often guides people who are going through that. And I just thought a lot of the theological references were really cool. You know, when they're going through, like, I think he refers to, like, the Elysian Fields. I loved any time the scythes were going in the fields, mm-hmm. that if you notice, any time that happens, that Matt Dillon or Jack, he just stops and is, like, it's the only time that he's, like, calm and, like, contemplative. So there's a lot of references that you can dig into theologically, but I thought it was interesting that of all the people that von Trier brings up in this, Verge, obviously Dante, the poet Blake, that he leaves out Milton in Paradise Lost. That's the most obvious one to me. So I thought it was curious that he left out any references to Paradise Lost. but he did make sure to have Verge quote Jim Morrison, and he asked Jack, "Do you want me to show you the way to the next whiskey bar?"
Yeah, right. Although I think Morrison took that from a traditional like folk number, but he also talks about Hitler and Mussolini and Pol Pot and all of like the great evil figures of the world, and as Jack describes them, us who create real icons of this planet. It's, you know, a lot of this is like, it's very trolly also. Like there's a whole, there's a whole montage of other Lars von Trier films leading up to this. There's clips from Melancholia and Nymphomaniac. I just watched both of them because this sent me on a whole bender, and Antichrist and other ones. And so it's like, you know, he's a real troll. And so I think a lot of this movie is he's sort of trolling his own filmmaking history. And that's why you get that montage and you get the stuff about the iconography or the of Nazi Germany. And, you know, he had, the reason he was banned from Cannes for so long before this movie was like comments that he made in jest about that. So there's a lot of wink nudge stuff going on too.
Yeah, I always wondered if this is him not just trolling, but basically saying, you know, he's kind of resigned to the fact that he's going to end up in hell, or maybe at best he hopes he ends up in purgatory and doesn't make the same decision that Jack makes when he reaches the end of his journey through the nine circles of hell. Or you could be right, Trent. He could literally just be making this movie to say, fuck off, everybody. You know, here's who I am.
That can be, I think it's both. All the above.
I like that there's a shout out and a few clips of Glenn Gould, the classical pianist.
Mm-hmm. What was that
I'm
about?
I'm a big fan of the Beethoven sonatas.
Was an,
I don't know.
An artist.
I think it goes back again to like some of these serial killers that think they have some sort of higher, distinct palette, and that maybe that's one way they justify their taste for killing people.
Absolutely.
That they like classic piano.
Well, they try to talk about it like it's art. Because like you were saying, Trent, when Jack goes on that whole rant about icons, and he's talking about, you know, some of the real tyrants in history, Virgil's next speech tells him about that concentration camp, Buchenwald. And he starts talking about how there was a tree in the middle of that concentration camp where allegedly Johann Wolfgang Goethe wrote some of his most important works while sitting under the tree before this was a concentration camp. So I think von Trier was kind of trying to tie in or bring Jack around to be like, no, like there's some real art, you know, surrounding some of this bullshit and some of this tragedy. And definitely not agreeing with Jack and his you know, calling these people icons and trying to call what he does art.
Yeah.
I was really disappointed that he didn't get to finish his final work when he's got everything. He wants to do the Full Metal Jacket, the one bullet thing. But, you know, I just was like, oh, you can at least just squeeze it off before this next segment, at least finish the work. And he didn't. I guess he did build the house, though.
The house that he built. I mean, the movie's called The House That Jack Built, and you should watch it just to see what that house is.
Yeah.
That's
It involves a taxidermied child. We can say that.
Oh, that child.
Grumpy.
Oh, my
grumpy,
God.
Grumpy the child who's taxidermied with a wide grin.
That will haunt my dreams forever. Absolutely. He does go on this really weird tangent too. I feel like towards the end when he starts talking about like what he quote, he's like, why is it always the man's fault? And like starts talking about like masculinity and like, this is obviously, I feel like Jack's serial killing ways kind of started with a masculinity issue. Cause just looking at his, you know, his first victim, he doesn't snap until she calls him a wimp. And
that's right.
Like,
that's right. Yes.
And I feel like that's the downfall from there.
Yes, that's right. He does. Right. He's really, it's when she challenges him that he is too weak and pathetic to be a serial killer. This is like the first scene, so we're not giving anything
Jack
away. Yeah, don't
takes
challenge
the
him.
Jack.
Jack's on Jack.
Jack, sir. Yeah.
The house that Jack built is on Showtime. It's on Prime with Showtime. I rented it on Vudu. I think it's on most of the rental platforms, so pretty easy one to see.
I visited your home this morning, after you'd left. I tried to play husband. I tried to taste the life of a simple man.
Put the gun
down.
I saw you in the box. Who's in the box?
It's in the box.
Not till you give me the
what's
gun
in the fucking box?
Milk, corn, sugar, you lie. Malt flavoring, high fructose corn syrup, salt, sodium ascorbate, ascorbic acid, riboflavin, vitamin B6, thiamine, vitamin A, folic acid, corn flour blend, whole grain yellow corn flour, degerminated yellow corn flour, wheat flour, whole grain oat flour, oat fiber, soluble corn fiber, hydrogenated vegetable oil, coconut, soybean, cottonseed, milk corn, molasses, wheat starch, reduced iron, zinc oxide, vitamin B6, natural flavor, blue 2, turmeric color, yellow 6.
What's in the box? I fucking love 7. It's so good. This is one of my movies. It's kind of like a Silence of the Lambs for me, where I'll just throw it on whenever, when I'm just like, oh, I don't know what to watch. I'll just, some light watching, I'll just watch 7. David Fincher, 95, watch this bad boy on Showtime Plus or whatever the fuck. And then you can rent it anywhere though, because it's still a very relevant movie.
It's out there.
You got Morgan Freeman, you got Brad Pitt, Gwyneth Paltrow, Kevin Spacey, that guy that usually yells, in army movies.
Arlie Ermey.
Thank you.
Yes, I just watched Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
Speaking of the metal jacket.
Oh, yeah? Oh, for both. So, yeah, this is like, I would say for me, this is like a perfect serial killer movie in the way that the serial killer is very smart, very calculated, very patient. Everything that he wants to happen, happens. And everyone else in his little game are like his little pawns. But also, if you didn't have the good, like the Morgan Freeman, like the smart detectives doing their part, none of this would work. So it's like that give and take of like not like of competent detectives with this crazy theological serial killer. It's just great. I am upset that some people didn't really like this film, because I thought this was like a very easy, crowd pleasing, go to serial killer film.
Mm.
I love 7, although it's a little dated with some of the flashy effects now. But I think if anyone can pull those off, it's David Fincher.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgive it a little bit because it's earlier in his career. And I feel like his filmmaking style has gotten much more sophisticated over time. But 7 always reminds me of the skit in the Wu-Tang album where he's like,
I fucking sew your asshole clothes and keep feeding you and feeding you and feeding you and feeding you.
I thought Morgan Freeman was great. I thought Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Pitt had great chemistry, and I like what's in the box.
This is a comedy for me. It's like, I watch this, I can most enjoy this as like a parody of Law and Order. I saw this back like in the early aughts, and I really didn't like it. I guess The End a Mile Away, not that it makes any sense, but I love, first of all, I really dislike the acting of Morgan Freeman across the board. I don't like him in any movie. It's just, he's very one note to me. He just has this thing that he does, and like, it's very annoying to me. So my favorite parts of this movie were like his little one-liners, like his wisdom, like he's preaching. Like, yeah, okay, well, yeah, he's quoting the Bible. Good, you're real Sherlock Holmes over here. But my favorite one of all, and he has many of these because that's what he does in these movies, is when the model, there's a scene where a model has been dispatched by the killer, and he's going through the seven deadly sins, if you don't know the conceit of this movie. So she's representing the pride killing, and the medical examiner is looking at the body, and the killer has cut off her nose. And so Morgan's standing there, and the medical examiner says, he cut off her nose. And Freeman goes, despite her face. And I'm like, this is the funniest fucking serial killer movie of all time. Kevin, what do you think?
I don't think it's going to shock anybody that I've watched this movie probably like 25 times in my life. I love this movie. It is very buddy cop setup. You've got Morgan Freeman as the cliche about to retire guy. Yes, you've got Brad Pitt as the overeager newcomer.
You know some shit's going to go down.
You know that Morgan's not going to be able to retire. You know he's going to be trying to calm this kid down. Here's the thing that I realized watching this movie this time, because it's been quite a few years since I've seen it. The whole movie, you're watching Morgan Freeman as though he's the mentor of Brad Pitt. And you're kind of like, okay, Brad Pitt's the puppy dog. But I watched this movie this time. I think that Brad Pitt is actually spending the entire movie like unknowingly mentoring Morgan Freeman. And that's simply because I'd never really paid attention to the last line of the film, not the Hemingway quote that Freeman gives. But Arlie Ermey is asking Morgan, as Brad Pitt is meeting his fate, you know, and Morgan Freeman this whole time has been like, I'm leaving this shit city. I'm going to a cabin in the woods. And then the captain's like, well, where are you going to be at, Somerset? And Morgan Freeman says, I'll be around. So I think like sort of I'd always watch this like, ah, oh, Brad Pitt didn't just learn his lesson. But I actually kind of think that he was unintentionally spending the movie, you know, kind of changing Morgan Freeman's perspective, which he spends, you know, the whole 2 hours saying he will never change. I love this movie. I think, Dave, you're right. The one thing I would say is that some of the 90s effects are super glaring. You know, having the band Coil cover Nine Inch Nails closer for the opening credit sequence is like as 90s as you can get. But look, Fincher considers this his first movie because his first actual movie was Alien 3, which if you ever want to waste 2 hours of your life, read about the making of Alien 3 and what David Fincher went through. So for him to bounce back like this, because he didn't even want to make movies anymore, he was quoted as saying he'd rather have colon cancer than make another Hollywood movie.
Oh.
And then again, I think the script, I think Andrew Kevin Walker deserves a lot of credit. It took him 2 years to write this script. It's a very, I think, clever movie. Trent, you probably disagree. I love like the way that you don't know who the serial killer is until he decides to make himself known to you. And I also think the marketing of this was brilliant in that they never even marketed the actual actor that played the serial killer because he's a pretty well-known actor and they didn't want you to know. They didn't want to detract from it.
It's like when you find out who Kaiser Soze is. And the Usual Suspects.
Yeah,
literally.
You gotta call Kevin Spacey for that. Big surprise. I liked you, Kevin. You were talking about the buddy cop. I mean, when I say like, I mean that like when you like something really ridiculous and funny. The buddy cop thing. I don't know if any of you guys have ever seen True Colors, or not Cyndi Lauper song. It's the movie Colors with Robert Duvall and Sean Penn.
Emilio Estevez.
Sean
maybe?
Penn and Robert Duvall. They're the cops fighting the gangbangers in L.A. And Ice-T does the soundtrack song.
Ooh.
Colors. Oh, yeah, you remember that? So it's the same thing. Bob Duvall is the old grizzled veteran, and Sean Penn is a young buck, and they call him Pac-Man because he's so excited to go. And it's the same. It's a very, you know, well-worn buddy cop thing. The old guy,
48 hours.
The young guy, yeah, same thing. But I really liked when they were both separately. That's like going to the library and like checking out. You know, Canterbury Tales and Dante's Inferno. Once again, they're checking out like, oh, this old literature, trying to piece together this crime. If I can read us T.S. Eliot. And then there's a scene later on where Brad Pitt's character, Mills, he sent one of the cops, one of the underling cops, to get him a bunch of Cliff Notes. And so now he's versed in the class a little bit. He needs the Cliff Notes. If he's really going to get a handle on this case, you've got to get to the bottom of some of this Shakespeare. I thought that was pretty funny.
I mean, did we get a, I'm too old for this shit.
Oh, yeah. Morgan, I mean, Freeman? There's like 10 of them. Yeah.
I don't think so. Not specifically.
Well, there's.
Look, I have to get Morgan Freeman's back here because, I do understand, Trent, that you could view him as kind of one note. Like you could probably take Somerset, his character in Seven, and say that he's a lot like his character in The Shawshank Redemption.
Every movie.
But watching this movie again, like much more focus because of the show, because you know we're watching these movies, I think, with a little more attention to detail than we have in the past. There's so many little things that Morgan Freeman does with his face. And the one that I think I love the most is when they're finally having like their bonding moment at Brad Pitt's apartment after Gwyneth Paltrow, Brad Pitt's wife, invites Somerset Morgan Freeman over for dinner. They're kind of starting to get into it together and actually have a bonding moment. And Brad Pitt's all like energetic and like, I'm going to get a beer. And he's like, you want a beer? And Morgan Freeman's like, wine. And Brad Pitt goes and gets like this regular giant water glass that you would, drink water out of and pours him like 12 ounces of red wine.
I loved that.
A tall boy of wine.
Right before that scene cuts away and they're like, they realize, okay, they notice the eyes of a picture and they know they have to go in the middle of the night to interview this witness again. Like just really subtly, Morgan Freeman finally kind of looks at the glass real quick and realizes that Brad Pitt gave him this fucking tumbler full of wine. There's a lot of moments like that.
Yeah,
that I think Freeman, you know, to give him credit, just to keep it an even playing field here.
Did you guys have a favorite murder of the seven deadly sins?
I
the Wu Tang one.
I did, and I wrote it down because I was so annoyed that I was watching this movie. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the sloth murder. It was great.
That was
cool as hell. I was all about the sloth murder. The whole sequence is very good, very creepy. Big ups on the sloth scene.
Yeah. I actually don't believe that you didn't like this movie. I refuse to argue with you about it, but I believe that you, especially when you first saw it, when you say you walked away and you didn't like it, I don't believe that. It has so many of the things that you look for in a movie.
No,
and back then they weren't done before.
I watched it in my apartment on Atlantic Street on the Hill with my long ex-girlfriend Sam, and I didn't like it. I can tell you exactly. I remember specifically. I just didn't like
it.
So
Sam's phone number, so I can. I thought we could see.
She's on Facebook. I don't think she
probably wearing a
I don't think she wants
t-shirt.
To hear from any one of us. I can tell you that. but I thought I would like it more this time. Maybe like I was young, I should give it a chance. And but it was like I said, it was great laughs. I loved. I did love the. I loved the Morgan Freeman line when he says, "You can lead a horse to water, but that don't make him a duck." You know, and it's like, oh man, this guy is full of wisdom.
It's that kind of funny.
Yeah. Such a butthole.
Why? It was good. God. Oh, and also, I got bullied. By the way, I just like people to know that I got bullied on this on the text thread. You know, there's a lot of awareness now about cyberbullying and a lot of toxic behavior online and shaming and stuff.
Are you kidding me?
It's so easy when you're like behind a screen, a phone, your Twitter fingers and text fingers say stuff. And I just said on the thread, I said, you know, my exact words were, I like When a Stranger Calls better than Seven. And Kevin said, just die.